Everybody, my name's Alma, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Tuesday morning Little Washington meeting, and I have a sponsor, and my sobriety date is August 5th, 1973. So I'm a lucky duck, and looks like so are you guys. I'm so happy that all of you are here. I love being at a speaker's meeting. I miss speaker's meetings. And so good for you all for having this meeting once a week. And I am a little ways away, but I really hope to get here more because the meetings I've been to with my friend Deborah, I loop her into bringing me. Have just been really rewarding, and I sense kind of a camaraderie, a community here that I love at all my meetings. I really love my Rappahannock meetings, but when I come here and I experience the way you all are doing this, it reminds me so much of what I found when I first got here. I love the way you do things traditionally. I love the structure. I love the format. It just makes me feel at home. Maybe that's like some people going to one kind of school or another kind of school, or going to a Baptist church or a Catholic church. You know, things are different in different places, even though they're going to end up the same way. But this meeting is so at home for me. I'll start at the very beginning briefly. That I come from farmer stock. My grandparents were tobacco farmers in North Carolina, down east, and my mother grew up, on a farm her whole life in the Depression and all that stuff. And then my father was from Minnesota, southwest Minnesota, and his father was a wheat farmer. My grandparents in North Carolina were God-fearing, law-abiding, non-drinking, non-smoking, just very Christian people who just had this farmer way of life that was very very secure for those who stuck around and adapted to it, and for those who weren't alcoholics. My father's family, I never knew that much about, but it was kind of wild. And he had six or seven brothers and sisters, and all but two of them died an alcoholic death, including my father. He did get sober off and on a few times, but he was an alcoholic, and all these siblings were alcoholics, and they didn't have much structure in their lives. So I suspect there may have been alcoholism going on for a while, but those are the two ways I could have gone. I spent very little time with that family. I never saw them again after I was 4 years old. This other family, I was around a lot. It was always where I called home. We went overseas a lot. My stepfather was in the military. We'd come back. That was home. And those people were my people. And yet, I turned out to be an alcoholic. And as I came to understand that is how I came to understand that I was predispositioned. It's, I believe, in my DNA. I was susceptible. You know, they've got those DNA deals you do online now. I found out that I'm also apt to drink an extraordinary amount of coffee. and a few other things I won't tell you about. But yeah, drinking too much coffee and drinking too much of everything. Anyway, my parents divorced, but I was having I thought a very happy childhood, and I had a wonderful mother. And then there were three more kids, and then turns out my stepfather liked pubescent girls, and all that started happening, as it does in so many of our stories. And it wasn't dealt with, and it was a big secret, and nobody was, there was no help. There was no help. But I was a pretty bright kid, and I'd been traveling all over the world. So I thought, okay, I am not going to let this affect me. He says, if I tell, the whole family will explode. There'll be no parents for my siblings. There'll be no Christmases. So I have to keep my mouth shut, put my head down, and I'm gonna manage. And that's when I took over the management of Alma Viator. And I was going to be somebody, and I was going to get the hell out of there, and I was going to show people, and I was not going to be affected by that sickness. I was the daughter of a sergeant in the military. We had no resources. I had a great idea, but I didn't know what to do to get it. I did get a 4-year scholarship. I'll get around to that, but because of my drinking. I'll just say quickly, because of my drinking, I was already engaged to be married when the scholarship and all kinds of aid came through. And I was 17. I didn't know what to do because my drinking started during high school. And early on, I discovered the magic of I may know what not know not what to do, but after a few drinks, I knew exactly what to do. I was cool. I was happy. Anything was possible. I was going places, and y'all could come along, and then the next morning would come. So I love to escape like that because my dreams, they came to like that. There they were. It's happening. Anyway, I ended up getting married very young. Had two children. Was depressed, drinking more and more, moved to a big city because I thought that's the only way you could, my husband, who was a little bit older, could make it in this world in the way I wanted to make it. And the drinking kept happening, and the drinking kept happening and was progressive. And I would think, oh, I've got a good idea. I'll get a job myself downtown, or maybe if we moved to a house in Bethesda, or maybe if we did this, and I get all excited and kind of bootstrap it for a while. And then it always would fall apart way too fast. And the drinking was an answer. I met a woman a few years older than me who was became my best friend. Her name was Brenda. And I also say that Brenda became my higher power because she was sophisticated. She'd lived in New York. She'd worked for a TV show. She'd done all these things that I wanted to do. So she taught me about decorating and fabrics and, all that stuff that a little farm girl, sergeant's daughter, just doesn't know. And I thought, oh, wow, Brenda. And Brenda loved to drink. And we would go, I'd get my, if my husband would babysit, I'd go over to her apartment and the two of us would drink Scotch sours and we would have little hors d'oeuvres and we would listen to Dori Previn and Andre Previn, oh, and Leonard Cohen records. And my husband said, oh, yeah, great music to commit suicide to. I said, yeah, it was wonderful. And we'd just tear down and badmouth the whole world and everything. Of course, I'd drive home drunk, drive, yeah. Anyway, it's about this time that I really started going against my own moral code. I really love my little children very much. But you can't take care of them when you're out drinking every night. When you're out partying all the time. And I feel like one of the worst things I did was when it was time to go out to dinner, myself, my husband, the two kids, gotta find a babysitter. I did not care who babysat for those children. Find me a babysitter. You can't, you how about who do you know? Who do you know? Many times complete strangers would come into my house and take care of my little children. And God only knows what could happen. I thank God to this day that they seem to have been fine, but I didn't know that. And I, quite frankly, when I'm in that state, I don't really care. If you ask me, I say, of course I care, but let's go. We're going to be late or what have you, And I started having brownouts and almost into blackouts. You know, I got sober fairly young, so there was a lot of stuff that hadn't happened to me yet. But I was feeling really, I was crying all the time. And I'd managed to lie to doctors and take amphetamines and Librium and Valium and all that. Just, you know, they prescribe anything back then. And then they stopped prescribing it. And I thought, oh God, how am I going to live without amphetamines or what have you? So that's when the drinking was every single day, all day long. I had to have some kind of substance to put into my body just to cope with life, just to get up in the morning or get up in the afternoon, more like it. And so along came August 1973. And I'd been, you know, breaking bones, falling off my shoe while walking my dog, you know, breaking my foot. It was getting sloppy, and I was embarrassing myself. And my husband would say, "Do you think you could stop drinking just for a day?" And I'd say, "Of course I could stop drinking just for a day. But if you had to live with you'd be drinking every day too." You know? What kind of question is that? And I did decide one day, I'm not going to drink today. By now, I was a mess and confused, so confused. And I thought, you know what? I just want clean sheets on the bed, normal food in the refrigerator. I want to have some meals on time for my little children, who were now 5, 4, and 7. I want something normal. I really do. Forget the glamour, forget anything. I want something normal. And we didn't, my husband was outside doing something in the yard, and the kids were playing, and I was la 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 cleaning house, and it's going to be a great day. And something happened at 4 o'clock. I'm in the car on the way to the Safeway to get, I don't know what, but all I got was Bloody Mary mix. And then I left the Safeway and I went to the liquor store and I got a fifth of vodka, and then, or half gallon of vodka. And then I came home and I just started drinking it with the Bloody Mary mix. And then when we had supper that night, I burned myself that night, by the way, on the stove. Nothing terrible, but typical. I was drinking out of the Diet Coke cans finally. To hide it, you know, Bloody Mary mix is gone. And all that went fine. I was feeling really pretty good. And I got the kids tucked in bed. My husband said he was really tired. He was going to go to bed early. He went to bed. And I was like, oh, everybody's asleep. And I tiptoed down to the basement, turn on the TV. I get my Family Circle magazines. I'm drinking vodka with grape Kool-Aid. I'm drinking vodka straight. I'm drinking vodka. Drinking vodka and cutting recipes out of Family Circle magazine, which is like, what? You're doing what? Anyway, what happened was I came to, and the TV was all zzz, those test patterns, because they used to, you know, turn off at a certain time. And I was like, just all groggy. And I came to because my little 4-year-old son was standing over me, just crying his little heart out. He thought his mommy was dead. And he was so upset. And out of nowhere, out of absolutely nowhere, the idea struck my brain that said, my God, there is something really wrong here. And the next thing that I happened was my brain said, God, please help me. And I woke up the next day. I went up, woke up my husband, told him everything, made him promise to help me call AA. I woke up, the birds are chirping, and I'm thinking, and then all of a sudden came, oh my God, What if he called those people? Oh my God, what have I
Yeah.
done? What have I done? Now, I was completely sincere, I can assure you, the night before. But then the alcoholic panic set in. No. How will I ever, if I divorce this husband and get married, how will I ever celebrate at the wedding? How will I ever have a birthday toast? How will I ever do anything fun again? Those thoughts went in my head, but he'd called and they said I had to call. And I called and I talked to this woman. Let me see. Okay. I talked to this woman who, my God, she'd been sober 5 years. That was just strange. And she said, and she sounded kind of formal. And I pictured her. I thought she sounded like she was rich. I thought, well, that's good. That part I like. But I pictured her living in this big house, but that she was confined to the kitchen because they put drop cloths over all of the furniture in the house because her life was over, clearly. What's she gonna do with that big house? She's not drinking. She has no life. She has to stay in the kitchen and call people like me and cook. And I, from what she was telling me, go to those meetings and I thought this makes no sense, but I've gone too far. I have to go through with it. Okay, what time are we going to the meeting? And I went to my first meeting that night, and I felt like Alice in Wonderland. My God, you've got to be kidding. There's all these hundreds of meetings in the whole area. If there were that many, then I don't know, 100 and something. But they're every single night, and all these people from all walks of life are going home and having supper, and they're all sneaking out and coming out to these churches and meeting, and nobody knows about it. And it's like, this is crazy, but kind of exciting. It was like brand new information. And I walked in with a broken foot, but I thought I disguised it really well. And but they all knew I was the new person, and I was just like kind of humiliated, but. Oh well. And two great speakers, two women speakers who were just powerful and had been sober a certain number of years. And I just couldn't believe. And they were telling my secrets up there. And I was like, oh my God, she hid hers there too. And she put the bottles in the neighbor's trash cans. And wow. And then I was given a big book. And then I was told to call my sponsor or the woman who was helping me, my temporary sponsor. And she gave me one of those 24-hour a day books, which I still have, that she wrote in there. It will always, you'll always be sober because it's always today, or something like that, something a little special thing that I still have. And I was just like, and I started devouring that book. And I was like, could I be an alcoholic? Could that possibly be what's wrong with me? This seemed, I can't believe I could be, I may get to stay, they may let me stay. I mean, I certainly wasn't that bad, but maybe that's what's wrong with me. I'm willing to stick around and for a little while and find out. And then the second night, this great couple that my husband knew and had worked with the husband picked me up. It was Dick and Peggy Martin. Now, Dick Martin, I think, was Billy's grand sponsor, right? He was Billy's grand sponsor, which just gives me chills because they were so helpful to me. And they really helped me through the first several months, and they were cool. And I liked them, and they made me laugh. And it wasn't going to be just this somber, here we go, like going to my grandmother's church. I'm sorry, grandmother, but it was true. It was much better than that for me. And then I started hearing about the third meeting. No, the third meeting was a second step meeting. This old timer said, now I know what all you new people are thinking, or you couple of new people, you're thinking, what's all this God business got to do with drinking whiskey? They said, well, just Settle down. Don't worry about it. Just listen for a while and see if you can't catch it. See what you might figure out here. Don't worry about it, because it doesn't make sense to some of you, I'm sure. I thought, no, it doesn't. I'm far too sophisticated about this God business. But I didn't stop to think, how did I get here? I just was like, oh no, God, he doesn't have anything to do with me, or me him. And I soon just kept like floating. Like when you learn how to float, it's just, they say it does, it's counterintuitive to just, you mean I just lay back in the water and I'm just gonna float? And you're like, that's, no. When you're a little kid and you do it, and I said, wow, it's true. So that's what I did. I thought, I can't do that. I'm not every day. No, I don't think so. And I kept doing it anyway, and it was like floating, and it just took. And it was such an adventure right from the get-go. Nothing particularly dramatic right away, but it was such a change. And I had so many new friends. I had so many people who genuinely cared about me. I had so many people who were happy if I went to the hot shops after the meeting with all of them and had, three or four more cups of coffee, my favorite, after vodka. But I just kept doing it. And don't you know? And they said, don't worry, don't worry. Just do this. Just follow and do what you're supposed to do, and just work it and quit worrying so much. Worrying ruins everything. You're spending all this time worrying, and 90% of it never ever happens. And why don't you just follow along here and decide that this is going to work, and good things are going to happen, and you'll just have to wait and see what they are. Well, what they are was about 1,000 times better than anything I had imagined in my little 16-year-old mind about what could happen for me one day, and I'll show them, and I'll be somebody, and I'll. That all was pitiful, pathetic compared to what my life has actually been like. A year, a little over a year after I came in the program, I got my dream job. Now, I had been a service rep at the phone company. I hadn't gotten to go to college. And here I am, and I don't usually talk about specifics, but this was just so astounding that here I am, a job that was, people sought from all over the country, and I am now the PR director at 26 years old of Ford Theater in Washington. I was just like, how could that be? How could that possibly be? And I had to learn. I didn't know what a PR director was, but that when I went and interviewed for that job, I remember distinctly. I took my higher power on my shoulder. I sat down there while I was waiting to go up, terrified, because it was so important to me and I really, really wanted it. I sat there and just said, please help me. Please help me accept whatever it is that you want. Please help me say what you want me to say. Please help me every single step of the way. Sigh, walk in, do it, and I got the job. And I kept that job for several years, and then I went on and got a bigger and better job, and then I had another bigger and better job, all in one of the most exciting, interesting fields ever. But I always kept AA front and center, always, always. I'll tell you a quick story because he's passed. I think it's really okay. I got to work. I was handling a show once that Jack Lemmon was in, and he'd been sober maybe 12 or 13 years. And we were in the car together, and I just asked him, are you a friend of Bill's? And he said, well, yes, I am, but I really don't talk about it out there. I said, no, don't worry. I said, I'm a friend of Bill's too. And I said, I wanted to bring that up to you, because it was when I saw Days of Wine and Roses that I found out what AA was and that there was help there. And I just want to thank you for that performance. And that, I don't think you, maybe you don't know how many people you've helped by that role that you had, and that now you're sober too. And he said, "Let me tell you a story." He said, when my family, and it was his kids who got to him too, when my family convinced me I had to go away for treatment, I agreed. But you know, he says, "I did take my golf clubs because I thought I'll go for 30 days to Arizona, whatever, whatever." You know, and then he said, and they were talking about all this God business, this higher power stuff, and he said he was really afraid after 30 days going home. So I was really afraid. Because I didn't have that part yet. I just didn't have that part. I was worried what's going to happen to me. So as he gets on the plane, there's a lot of people sitting up front, and he kind of sneaks to the back of the plane where there are no people because he doesn't want to have to talk to people. You know, because that too many people always trying to talk to him. So he wants to go back there and be by himself. And sure enough, here comes a guy down the aisle, saying, "I'm sorry, I don't mean to bother you, Mr. Lemon, but I just have to share something with you today." He said, "It's a miracle to see you." He said, "It was Days of Wine and Roses that helped me get sober." He said, "And today is my 10th AA anniversary, you know." And Jack Lemon said, I said, "Oh, would you like a seat?" And he said, "It was right about then it got in touch with his higher power. It was like, oh, this is how it's gonna work. So maybe I'll be okay now." And that is the kind of stuff that just happens over and over again to so many of us. Well, flash forward. That's a long time that we get to speak, isn't it? Oh, well, I'm afraid I could bore you for 2 or 3 hours if you let me, but no, I just like I said, the career-wise things got better and better. I got a divorce from that first husband rather quickly, and then I got married to someone in the program. You know, boy meets girl on AA campus, and you know, love at first sight follows quickly. And he was very handsome, I have to tell you. He was handsome. And he's a good guy. But it wasn't, it made no sense at all. I just wanted to be married to a handsome guy in AA and, you know, live ever happily ever after. That's what I wanted still. And after about 7 or 8 years, that all fell apart. And we shared custody of our child. We had a child. Who's now been sober 27, 28 years, by the way. He had alcohol, mommy and daddy, but now he's sober. Thank God. Again, thank God. So that ended. And wouldn't you know it, right before that divorce was final, my sponsor helped me host a little dinner party for some people from Capitol Hill. He was doing me a favor because I had to pay off this thing of my ex-husband's. Anyway, we were all trying to do a good deed. And so I didn't want to go to dinner, though. I didn't want to go. I had other things to do. But my sponsor had organized. Okay, here I come. And I went. And don't you know, this guy named Ben Jones walked in the door. And we did have it. We weren't on AA campus, but it was love at first sight. And I re quickly rearranged the seating at the table so I could sit next to And we talked all night. We embarrassed ourselves by not talking to anybody else, just talking to ourselves all night. I gave him a tour of this place that we were, and we went outside with a big harvest moon and oh my God. And I went home that night and I called my one of my sponsees and I said, "Oh, I just met my next husband." And he knew he was very interested. He didn't realize we were getting married yet, but I knew. Anyway, it was about 3 years later that we did get married. But there was hard times through that. There were campaigns and just it was not necessarily easy, though determined and you know, God's will be done. That was going to happen. That was going to happen. So we get married, and he had lost an election, which is, that's not fun, guys. That is not fun when you lose an election. And have been unfairly redistricted. He had nothing to do with that. No. He says that he lost the election because of illness. And I said, really? He said, yeah, the voters got sick of me. That's not true either. But anyway, he's a great guy and a great program. And so we got married and began our adventure. He had, I thought I'd finally hit the pay dirt, marrying somebody not just important on one coast, but important on the other coast. And I could maybe relax a little now. And do you know, he is not cut out to be a lobbyist, which is the main thing that people who leave Capitol Hill do. It's how you make a lot of money, it's how, all this stuff. He can't do that. He's a straight ahead, straight shooter, what have you. And all my friends were married to lobbyists, and I knew a lot of lobbyists, and he wouldn't be one. And I was so distraught. And he'd worked for somebody to get elected president. Somehow, no jobs were coming from that person either. And I was so angry with God. I remember like being on the floor with a primal scream of, I can't stand this. How could you do this to me? Ungrateful little thing that I was. Anyway, how could this be? I'm so tired. And again, that idea came into my head, which is, Alma, I have given you the talent, I've given you the ability, I've given you the whole kit and caboodle. You just don't worry about what Ben's doing. You get busy with what you're doing and leave the man alone. And I'll take care of him. I love that expression, God doesn't have any grandchildren, It's that way with your children, your spouses, the whole deal. They have their own higher power going on. It's not my business to tell everybody what and how to do. So sure enough, all of a sudden I've been expanding. I've got a office up in New York. I've got a da-da-da-da-da. My business is growing great. And then he's out in California doing some more fun stuff. And then he did have a bunch of illness. So, but I was fine. I was fine. My whole family was fine. I do remember my son, though, who was at a kind of prestigious school in DC. He's about fourth grade. And he says, Mom, we lived in a condo kind of building. We were on the ground floor, and it was sure nice enough. But he said, all my friends have houses that are practically the size of our whole building. Our whole building is just as big as my friends' houses. And I said, Michael, you know what? I got an idea. We can move to a neighbor. We can get you enrolled in a school where your house will be the biggest one. How about that? We can go to one of those schools, and then you'll be the top one. And he's like, he never brought it up anymore. Anyway, and then the time came when my son was, playing up in high school. He's playing with the seniors and the juniors, and he's in freshman, and he starts drinking with those guys and those girls, and it only went on for about 9 months. And there were AA meetings where there were young people that I was able to introduce them to that. And they just took over. They just took over, and I watched, and his father watched, but they just took him, And now he's married, has two little babies. They've just moved to Nashville. I just saw him yesterday. I mean, what more do you want? Really, what more do you want? My other son, little Wesley, who found me on the floor, he's got a business in DC, three kids, two just graduated from this or that, and everybody's just doing great. I have a daughter who really struggles, and her kids have have, there's autism, there's this, there's that, but we deal with it, you know? All my kids have learned through this program. This program has not only raised me and taught me how to live and how to do and what's right and what's wrong, and with the guidance of my higher power every step of the way. None of this is possible for me without that higher power. But we've all been raised by this program. Me, all my kids, and actually my second husband, and now my third husband, Ben, all raised by the program. And they know, as I have learned, that no matter what we're doing, no matter how much possessions or prestige or anything like I thought was important back when I was 16, that's just not it. That is not it. That's just what you do, you know? And I've learned in here that, if you're cleaning kitchens, that's fantastic if you do a good job, you know? And if you earn the money that they're paying you. And guess what? If you're doing a really good job doing that kitchen and they're cheerful about it, you may have three or four or five more soon to clean. And they'll just be, and you'll be, you know, and that's how it goes. Just wildly blessed in those ways. Eventually, we moved to Rappahannock County and opened a little business here. We ended up, clearly, God's been scooching us along the whole time. We finally got to heaven in Rappahannock County, and now we can just be there and just wake up every single morning and look outside and say, "My God, look at this." You know what? I hope not too many more people find out about it all the way it is around here, all of us, because the more people that are finding out about it. But anyway, for now, it is totally heaven, and I think it will be for a long time. But it's like fresh artwork every time you open your eyes in the morning. What's the sky look like today? What's the, is the mountain all foggy? What's going on? Oh my God, there was a big storm. Look at all that destruction. And now, and then all the farmers and everybody comes along and cleans it up, and neighbor helps neighbor, and here we go. You know, that's a really great way to live. My friends in DC were horrified. We moved out here in 97. Like, oh my God, what's she doing? What is she going to do? Because they know how much I like the nice clothes and nice this and the sports car and all that stuff, you know? And now we got a pickup truck and I got all kinds of extra cool stuff. And they thought I was nuts. It took me a while. I was involved in lots of projects and stuff. My husband moved into state here, and then we took $10,000, and he wanted to open this little stand in Sperryville and put his old memorabilia there and stuff, and sell a few little trinkets. And I was like, I had a very big project going on, and I was like, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. I said, but honey, if you have the money and the time and that's what you really want to do, fine. I've got meetings at the White House or Capitol Hill or New York, baloney stuff. I have to go. And then at the grand opening for that weekend, about 5,000 people showed up. And I was like, holy crap. I didn't know it was that popular. I thought, I better get with the program. And it was about, I don't know, it was about 2003 that I finally quit doing everything else. And the day I quit doing everything else and just started working with our business is the day that I ran away from home and joined the circus, which is like a punctuation mark on our life. Now, I'll get back to that. But all through our lives, all through all this stuff that's going on, we've just been living life. And all the normal stuff is happening, and there are really terrible things that are happening, and there are big disappointments, and there are losses. And we have really never been able to accumulate very much. Sometimes it's really been hand to mouth, truth be told, but we just haven't worried about it. We just do the next thing, do the rest. We know we're going to be provided for. And we finally closed that business, and we now have two down in Tennessee, and then we had another one in Sperryville. That was going to be fun. It was close to home, a little tiny place, no big deal. And then we get run out of Rappahannock County for really unfair reasons, if you ask me. I mean, there may be other opinions, but it was, and it hurt. It was very hurtful because nobody was trying to do anything wrong or bad, and just to get raked over the coals with not much notice and the paper. And it's like, this is so unfair. I can't believe it. I remember going to the meeting that day. I never stopped going to meetings. Good stuff happens, I go to a meeting. Bad stuff happens, I go to a meeting. Sad stuff happens, I go to a meeting because all the answers are right here. I need to be leveled out. I need to connect with where all my power is coming from. So that night I showed up and I was really mad. There was even a couple of people there who I think were on the other side. So I just tried to, okay, calm down, calm down, get distracted. And we could have had a fight. And I went home that night and said, honey, it's not worth it. Don't worry about it. Who cares? Let's just close her up and either just be done with Virginia in terms of that business, or who knows, we might move somewhere else. And then everywhere from every community, all surrounding us, calls from the Board of Trade or the this or that, come to our place, come to our place. We said, what? And when you said go to Luray, I thought, over that mountain, are you out of your mind? I don't think so. And then there was the perfect place once again. And I find that every time it seems to be God's will, things just fall into place. When I push and push and push and pray and say, please, just this once, it's so important. I gotta have it. I might get it. And then it's like, uh-oh. I'm out here on this limb, God, and I don't know what to do. This was a really dumb idea, wasn't it? But every time it seems to be God's will, and I'm patient and I listen and I'm following, it works out. So we opened this other business and have had big events. And I've learned how to stand up to people. I mean, like sheriffs and big shots, who are trying to, I'm not going to name names, but people in power who try to take advantage of a situation. Okay, and with this little business. So people in power trying to take advantage of the situation. I am never afraid to walk right in and have a conversation because my higher power is right here. And I know I'm telling the truth. I know I'm trying to be fair. I know what's going on. And I won't back down. Maybe we can reach a compromise. Probably not. I'm wrong. I know. And then finally they, sometimes you have to compromise to let people, as my sponsor used to say, you got to leave a horse to ride off on. So that's something else I've learned. In a big fight, you got to leave them a horse to ride off on. So that's another little goodie that I've learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So that business doing great. And then my husband is getting, he'll be 84 and August, he's getting, much older. It's much harder for him to do all this. Very hard to let go. Like athletes who are past their prime and they just got to do it one more season, and they get a concussion or break their back or a big disappointment. It's better to go out when you're on top. So he has just retired, but so it's me, little old me, but it's actually God. And then last week, right after the week, right after the 2 days after his retirement, a manager that I've had for 20 years, who also has been taking care of things a lot for the last 4 years, I had a very debilitating illness for 4 years that really took me down. He's been managing things, doing great, doing this, doing that. Well, But he was an unbearable person, and he just went too far last Tuesday, and says, "Well, I won't do that, and I'll give you my 2 weeks' notice." And I said, "Well, I'll take your 2 weeks' notice, but it's immediate right now. Finish, goodbye." Because I knew it was the right thing to do. I had should have done it a long time ago. I never had the guts to do it because I didn't want to have to do all that work. Again, I didn't want to have to do all that work. It's like God saying, Alma, now just straighten up. You can do this. This is the right thing. Okay. So now it's all landed back in my lap. And that's fine. I'm not afraid. You know, I have so much to learn. I have such a steep learning curve right now, but I'll be fine. You know, a panic will set in sometimes when I hear something, a medical diagnosis, or you got to have an operation, or your daughter's been taken to the mental institution, or your grandson's. I go, okay, we're fine because we are fine. It's just life. There's just nothing to be really afraid of. The only thing I'm afraid of really is me. You know, I'm afraid of me. I'm afraid of how I'll react to stuff. I'm afraid of what I'll say to people. I'm afraid of where I might get dishonest. I am afraid of where I might fudge the truth. I mean, it's only been like 8 or 10 years that I'm not afraid if I got a piece of mail from the IRS in the mail. I'm not afraid to open it because I've actually been doing it like you're supposed to for the last 10 years. Please do not ask me about before that. I really got it straight, finally, you know. Just two other little things. One is, you know, that eighth and I mean that seventh and eighth, sixth and seventh step. Two things that I was when I married my third husband, I was a very jealous person. I was so jealous, like if I have it for no reason, you know, a pretty woman walk in the room, if my husband just happened to be talking and looked over, no change of expression, talk back, well, I'd be like, ah, I saw you looking at her, ah, blah, 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 blah. Just stupid, really stupid. And finally, after we've been married about 3 months, that I got mad at him for somebody that he had dated twice 6 months before he even met me. And I was mad because of, I don't know why, but I was mad. And he looked at me and he said, Alma, you're crazy. He said, and you'd better get a handle on this. You know, slap in the face. I left. I was so angry, and I drive over to the giant parking lot, and I'm just sitting there in the car, and I'm just so angry, angry. And then I start praying, and then, you know, that sixth and seventh step hit me, like this really is a terrible problem, and I've been plagued by it for a long time, and I don't seem to be able to stop. And I said again, God, please help me. Please show me I really am ready, and I beg of you, or I ask you to please help me. And guess what? All of you women could just march right in front of my husband right now, and I'd say, hey, Ben, do you know so and so? Do you know so and so? I'm not jealous. And I haven't been since that night. It's like another miracle because it was going to be horrible for our relationship. He's a very popular guy. It was going to be horrible. And then the other thing that happened was a lot of the jobs I had, they give you a corporate expense card. And everybody loved me and trusted me, and I did such a great job and everything. The expenses just kept growing and growing. More dinners, needed more pictures framed for the office walls, needed this because my bosses were always up in New York, or usually nobody was like, right. I just kept abusing my expense account. And so I prayed about that. Finally, I was going to go speak at a meeting, a speaker's meeting, and I was so distraught. And I prayed in the car, how could I go talk and have this big sing? So I prayed and I asked for that to be removed. And do you know, 3 or 4 or 5 times after that, I would start to use it again in a ways inappropriately. I could never find it. Every time I tried to charge something I wasn't supposed to, I couldn't find it. And finally, I thought, okay, God. And so what I did is I sent the corporate cards back. And anytime I working for somebody, I needed to have incur an expense, I would incur the expense and then turn it in and get reimbursed. Because otherwise, I can't be trusted, you know, especially if everything's in a pinch and I've worked so hard for them and I did all that. They made me do this or that. I deserve this. I can rationalize and be dishonest in a heartbeat. And there are other character flaws, but you've all got them too, so you know what I'm talking about. Some more, some less, I don't know, but you got them. That's the bad news, and the good news is there's something to do about it, you know? But the self-honesty and the keep showing up and the keep working it and to keep going to the Friday morning step meeting and reading that step over and over and discovering that it miraculously has brand new information every time you sit down and read it. It's like, what? I didn't know that. I've been sober for almost 52 years. It's like, I didn't know that. I never saw that before. But my God, just think what a gratitude we have to Bill W. and Bob and Roland and even Carl Jung. But by allowing, I think, this is my theory, God to work through all of those people to create all this. Because to me, this is all God-given. I mean, if you'd asked me this 51 years ago, I'd have said, Paul, oh, that's just those people, you know, they're a little extreme. But I'm sorry, I know that now. I know that now. And I've come to believe that it's a quote, I forget who it's from. Well, two of my favorite quotes. The first from Herbert Spencer in the back of the book that says, you know, something about how the guaranteed ignorance is contempt prior to investigation, number one. And then number two, for me, is not in our literature, to my knowledge, that says, and this is what I've come to believe, that we are spiritual beings having a human experience rather than human beings having a spiritual experience. That's what I've come to believe. And it's all thanks to you guys and to the God of my understanding. So thank you very much.